We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now, out in cinemas this weekend is Solo, A Star Wars Story. Before we review the film, here's its star, Alden Ehrenreich, talking about taking on the beloved character of Han Solo.
Well, I think who you meet in this movie is really more of an idealist. He's kind of, he's in a tough background and he's fighting to make a new way of life for himself. And so some of the fun of the movie is getting to watch him learn lessons and have these kind of dangerous and hair-raising experiences for the first time.
All right, course to Kessel is set. Plugging coordinates in now. Just keep your pinky on the yoke. Try not to mess anything up.
Whatever you say, my lady. Just let me know when you're ready to jump.
Ready and... ready.
It's just a simple jump to hyperspace and we're there. What's so tricky about that?
Plenty. Can't plot a direct course to Kessel. You have to thread through the Psychotic Cluster and then pass through the Maelstrom.
You done flirting? I'm still ready.
You might want to buckle up, baby.
A little bit there from Solo, A Star Wars Story. Of course, the big film out in cinemas this weekend. And Chris Wasser from The Herald joins me now over the phone to review the film. Chris, before we get your thoughts on it, for anyone that is intrigued to see it this afternoon or later in the week, what is going on in the story?
What's going on is that the folks in charge of the Star Wars universe and the folks at Disney are keen to kind of flesh out all the beloved characters from the first Star Wars trilogy, from the second one, even this one. And they're going to give everyone a backstory. So we're starting with Han Solo. And the first thing you have to ask yourself is, did you want to know what Han Solo was at in his 20s? Did you want to know how he met Chewbacca? Apparently people do. So they're working with this story that Han Solo is an aspiring pilot. He is living on this crummy planet with his girlfriend Kira, played by Emilia Clarke. Han Solo is, of course, Alden Ehrenreich, who we would have seen stealing the show altogether in the Coen brothers' Hail Caesar. So you've got Han, you've got his girlfriend Kira, and they're working on a way to get off this crummy planet, and unfortunately they're separated. So one thing leads to another, and Han Solo ends up joining the Imperial Army and spending a few years there, where he meets a gang of outlaws, essentially, headed up by Woody Harrelson's character, who gives them a job. They're working for a guy, a crime lord named Dryden Voss, played by Paul Bettany, giving it loads, actually. And they have to steal some fuel. And again, one thing leads to another. There's an awful lot of ups and downs in this story, but Han eventually finds Kira, who's actually working for this crime lord. And as I said, they have to go off and steal some fuel. The story is a little bit all over the place, as I'm sure it sounds, but it's not really about the plot. You're here to, you know, understand where this character comes from. You're here to see him, you know, meet Lando Calrissian for the first time, played with very cool enthusiasm and excitement by Donald Glover. You're here to see him meet Chewbacca, flying the Millennium Falcon for the first time. So it's very much about the character. The plot comes second.
Because there's been so much going on behind the scenes with this, Chris, yeah, which we're going to touch on now. And one thing that gave me hope initially was that Lawrence Kasdan was attached to write the script for this. And he brought his son on board to bring things a little bit more up to date. And for those that don't know, Lawrence Kasdan, he's a filmmaker in his own right, but he's probably best known for writing the screenplay for The Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark. So, and of course, he also wrote co-wrote the screenplay for The Force Awakens. He said that he'd always wanted to delve into Han Solo's backstory. It was something that was always brewing away inside of him and almost go about the Western sort of way with it. So originally then we had Lord and Miller, the filmmaking duo behind the Lego Movie and the Jump Street films. They were brought on board, but all didn't go according to plan, Chris. From what we know behind the scenes, why were they given the heave-ho?
There's various rumours about that. I mean, even ahead of Solo's release, I thought, yeah, fine, I'll sit down and watch that. It should be grand with Ron Howard taking over. You know, he's a safe pair of hands. This should be watchable at best. But if someday a documentary surfaces about the events that went on, you know, behind the scenes of Solo, I will watch that. Because, you know, as you say, Disney hired Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who are best known for making the Lego Movie, who are best known for making comedies like the Jump Street films, to make what, you know, I can only presume, when they were hired, the idea was that they're going to do something different with this. They're going to make an adventurous, perhaps even comical, space western somewhere, you know, something like Guardians of the Galaxy. But the story goes that they were 3-4 months into shooting this thing. I think 70 to 80% of the film was shot. And, you know, the producers had a look at it and they were just not happy. There's all sorts of rumors that Alvin Ehrenreich's performance as Han Solo just wasn't going according to plan, that an acting coach had to be brought in, if not to help him, you know, get more comfortable with the character, at least to make, you know, make his performance a bit more like Harrison Ford's, which is, you know, you're asking for the impossible there. There's also that, you know, it was too comedic. There was one story where apparently the character of Han Solo was too much like Ace Ventura, a pet detective. And I'd love to see that footage, if that description is right. So it just wasn't going according to plan. So the guys agreed to part ways. You know, creative differences were cited. And Ron Howard, who is, you know, he is a safe pair of hands. That's not necessarily, you know, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he... You know, when you go to see a Ron Howard blockbuster, you know, he hasn't made a decent blockbuster in a while. And he, you know, the last few films based on those Dan Brown books haven't been great, but he can direct the hell out of an actioner. So when he started, he was going in to save this thing. He had to reshoot some things. Some actors had to be recast because, you know, the film was going way over, you know, the amount of time given to its original production schedule. So in the end, you are, well, at least I was, I'm looking for the cracks. And you can see the cracks sometimes. Sometimes Solo plays, you know, it takes itself far too seriously, you know, in explaining the character. It does get a bit over-explaining at times. There's way too much exposition. And then sometimes droids are introduced that are like something from Guardians of the Galaxy, that are like something from a different film entirely, that are like something from a space sitcom or even a Galaxy Quest adventure. So you can see the joins there a little bit. But at the same time, it's almost slick enough to, you know, it just about gets away with it.
We have to now speak about Alden Ehrenreich just a little bit more, Chris, because his performance, as you mentioned, if rumours are to believe, they had to bring in an acting coach. And if he fails at cracking Han Solo, the film just absolutely dies on its backside. It really does. And when you're taking on a character that is so synonymous with an actor, like Harrison Ford, when you think of him, you think straight away of Han Solo and Indiana Jones. The idea that anyone would step into those boots, it's a tall order. If you just move off it a little bit, if you were even to think of like Steve Martin thinking he could pick up the mantle of Inspector Clouseau from Peter Sellers, he was on a hiding to nothing with that role. But there's certain actors that can step in and make a decent job, like take James McAvoy with Professor X. But then, granted, Patrick Stewart, he's not synonymous with Professor X, really and truly. So with Alden Ehrenreich, I was at the same screening as you. I thought he did a relatively decent job. Now, the reason why I'm a bit hesitant but is that Harrison Ford has such natural charisma and likability, and you just straight away you bought into him as this lovable rogue that you wanted to hang out with him but you wouldn't trust him. Whereas with Alden Ehrenreich, I don't know if you felt the same, Chris, it really felt like he had to act that. It just didn't come as effortlessly as it would for, say, an actor like Harrison Ford. And granted, I know that's going to be tough. What did you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are scenes here where you can tell he is really, really trying. And unlike, say, I mean, Donald Glover is very good as Lando Calrissian. And Lando Calrissian, you know, he was always just there on the side of the original films. And, you know, you're not expecting, this isn't a film about him. If rumors are true, then we will get that at some stage. But Donald Glover actually does a very good impression, you know, in his performance of the original Lando Calrissian. Whereas with Alden Ehrenreich, he was probably thinking, this character is perhaps even more iconic. There is no point in me doing an impression because it's just going to be impossible to be better than Ford was with the original, in the original films. So you can't, yeah, you are correct there. He is acting here. And that charisma, that enthusiasm, that coolness, it doesn't come as naturally to him as it would. And I mean, he's a good actor, but other than, say, the Coen Brothers' Hail Caesar, which I mentioned, and, you know, that weird, you know, Rules Don't Apply, you know, that was a very strange film. I'm wondering, is he as good as we kind of thought he was at the beginning of his career? And he's okay here, as is everyone else. I mean, Woody Harrelson is fine. Emilia Clarke is sort of playing Emilia Clarke here. Yes, all eyes are going to be on, you know, if Ehrenreich can, you know, better Harrison Ford. He doesn't, but he gives it, you know, he tries. Believe it that. He does a decent job of it.
Yeah, I found with this one in particular, Chris, that it was like an album track. It's just there. It didn't really jump out, and I think for the reason being, there's a lot of fan service. There's a bit of a box ticking exercise where Han has to meet Lando in order to get the Millennium Falcon and the Kessel Run and all of these different things. But when you kind of take a moment to kind of let the film decompress a bit, there's not a hell of a lot going on. The stakes aren't very high in this film, to the point where you're kind of going through the motions. You're going from one set piece to another, and how are they going to get out of this one? That's grand. But it's never really leading to anything very significant, I found. So by the end of it, I thought, well, you know, it's great to see how Han Solo met Chewbacca, but as you said as well, I didn't really care about that. Sometimes it's nice to have that mystery. I just came away from it and went, it's grand. And but the
That's
thing,
it, yeah,
yeah, I kind of. But you know what? Hopefully, with the right director for a second film, and with Alden Ehrenreich maybe a bit more comfortable in the role, we might get a better Solo film. But are you eagerly anticipating even that, Chris?
I wouldn't, you know, it's, as you said, it's grand. I wouldn't mind watching a follow-up. I'm just thinking, you know, again, and I hate to repeat it, there really is no need for it, in a sense. And it would be nice if, you know, the people with the keys to the Star Wars universe, you know, just took some chances. I mean, I hate to, you know, when you're talking about stakes in a film like this, it's like X-Men prequels, it's like the Hobbit prequels, it's like the Justice League films, you know, the DC films hopping all about the place in terms of their timelines. You are never afraid. I mean, even when Han Solo, when Alden Ehrenreich's Han Solo is, you know, he's at the wheel of the Millennium Falcon for the first time, and, you know, himself and Lando and, you know, Chewbacca, they're in danger. You're never worried that they're not going to make it out of this alive, because if they didn't, unless they incorporate some time travel element to it, which they don't, you know, they're going to be all right. We're going to see Han Solo, as, you know, portrayed by Harrison Ford in A New Hope. Nobody is going to die here. Everyone's going to be fine. And it's not always about that, but there's no real stakes involved. So if the story is not as strong, which it's not, you are kind of thinking to yourself, well, then why are we here?
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a bumpy ride. It's watchable at best. But if there is going to be a second and a third one, it'd be nice if, you know, you sat down with some other directors, maybe not Lord and Miller again. I doubt they'd want to come back on board, or that they'd even be asked. But come in, you know, talk to someone who might actually want to do something interesting with it, because I do think when you talk about Star Wars, when you talk about fan service, like, I think actually fans would like to see a bit of a mix-up.
I think so, and a bit of depth,
a bit of a shaker.
A bit of depth as well. Chris, we got to move on, unfortunately, but out of 10 for Solo, a Star Wars story, what would you give it?
I think it's clunky in places, chunky, but, you know, it's watchable. It gets the job done. It just about holds your attention. So we'll go 6 out of 10.
Grand stuff. Yeah, I would probably just be a little bit over 6.5 for me. Chris Wasser, thank you so much. Chris is going to be back a little later on, as we'll be taking a look at more cinema releases, such as Show Dogs, On Chesil Beach, starring Saoirse Ronan, and the Oscar-nominated animated film from Nora Toomey, The Breadwinner. That's all still to come on We Love Movies.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now on We Love Movies, we are going to take a look at the movie news. And as always, Andy McCarroll joins me. Andy, lots to get through. First of which is Happy Time Murders, which is almost like this really dark, top shelf version of The Muppets. I had heard about this film mooted years ago, that Jim Henson's son was hoping to get this made, but because obviously the image of The Muppets, you would never imagine them going into adult territory, but now they finally have. But they've managed to pair The Muppets up with some recognisable names. So for those that haven't seen the trailer, what did you make of it? What the hell is going on in it?
Yeah, like you said, it's actually directed by Jim Henson's son, who of course created The Muppets. And as you said as well, I've been following this for years. I thought this sounded absolutely fantastic. It's kind of like a really dark version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's when the puppet cast of an old 80s TV show start getting murdered. This LAPD, this Los Angeles cop, and a private eye puppet kind of team up to try and find the killer. Now, I was absolutely dying for this, and any bit of excitement I had went out of the room the second they cast Melissa McCarthy in the role. It's every Melissa McCarthy film you've ever seen. She's fat or she's gross, and that's the joke. And you're just like, that's not what this film should be. It should be a kind of really dark, sinister Roger Rabbit, where it just looks like a kind of gross-out comedy now. And anyone who's seen the trailer, it's kind of real low ball humor for something that I thought could have been a really clever take on something we haven't seen before.
Yeah, the other comparison I would make is Peter Jackson. I think it was his second or third feature film he directed, called Meet the Feebles.
Feebles.
Yeah, it's nearly has shades of that about it.
It does, but it doesn't seem to have any of that, the cleverness that I had in Meet the Feebles. Is a, anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a really, really clever film. I don't know how well it would kind of hold up now. But this just looks like a real switch your brain off films, where I think the premise of it is really, really good, and something that, you know, there's so much you could have done with it instead of turning it into every Melissa McCarthy film you've ever seen.
You're one of the best damn cops I've ever seen.
I'll have your badge for this. I'm the fucking FBI.
Oh yeah, what's that stand for? Fucking big idiot.
We move on now to another film which has been garnering a lot of attention this week, Andy, and that is Mission Impossible Fallout, which is the sixth installment in the series. Tom Cruise, he's still looking well for whatever age he is at the moment, whatever he's lying about. I presume he's in his, what, about 54 or something like that he must be. But he's also claiming that this film is going to have the most audacious stunt ever in the Mission Impossible series.
Yeah, he was seeing, everyone who's seen the Graham Norton clips have seen him falling off the, when he was doing the jump and breaking his ankle. This looks absolutely brilliant. It just looks so much fun, adrenaline. Like, there's that brilliant scene in the film, in the trailer, where Henry Cavill kind of reloads his arms and then comes charging at him. And if he doesn't turn around and say, "Here comes the cavalry," I'm taking a star off the review there and then.
I love it. Here's a little bit from Mission Impossible Fallout.
He's not just some observer. He's an assassin.
I don't trust anybody outside of this room.
You go rogue, he's been authorized to hunt you down and kill you.
That's the job.
Which way, Benji?
Turn left!
Go, 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 go!
What are you waiting for?
I'm jumping out a window!
Oh, sorry. Good luck.
Andy, do you think this could be the last film in the series?
Again, they keep trying to set this up. Like, I remember with the Jeremy Renner character, the kind of, that was the rumor. They were setting it up for him to take over. And with Henry Cavill in this, there's kind of rumors that he's going to be the one to take over the series. But I think it's very much Tom Cruise's. It's not something that works outside of him. And he hasn't really had many huge hits outside of this. This seems to be the one he keeps going back to. He'll try something like An Edge of Tomorrow or the Jack Reacher films. They'll do badly, he'll come back. And then these, you know, the success of these films kind of funds his passion project. So they're saying it might be the last one. I think there's going to be at least one more anyway.
Just moving on now to some casting news, Andy, because John Wick Chapter 3 is currently filming at the moment. And some of the cast from The Raid are now involved.
Yeah, we've also got the name for John Wick. It's going to be called John Wick 3 Parabellum, which means, Gordon?
Do you know what? I'm not going to lie to you, Andy. It could be a vitamin for all I know. I haven't a clue.
It's actually Latin for prepare for war, which is something I, of course, remembered and didn't Google 2 seconds before the show started. But yeah, to your point, casting news, there's some really big names. Halle Berry's after being announced in it as well, along with Angelica Houston, who, you know, was Morticia from the Addams Family. We've got Asia Dillon from Orange is the New Black. Jason Mendoza from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's also in The League. And you've got Mark Dacascos, who was in Brotherhood of the Wolf again, another really good martial arts film. If anyone hasn't seen, I definitely recommend checking that out as well.
Brilliant stuff, Andy. Look, the John Wick films, they're really good, and they've just almost rejuvenated Keanu Reeves' career as well. Just to move on, Andy, to an Irish perspective, Dublin Old School got its trailer released this week. Here's a little bit from it.
I never told you that I loved you.
You never loved me.
Yeah, I did. Make sure that when you tell your story, you lived it like it was a novella version of a War and Peace style work of Dublin fiction. Epic in small ways. Live it up now, because these be the days.
What has he got his top off?
It's hot.
Never any excuse for a man to take his top off in Dublin.
Dublin Old School is released in cinemas on June 29th. I've got to say, Andy, I'm looking forward to it. What about you?
I'm not kind of convinced, I'll be honest, which it looks very much in the sort of the vein of Human Traffic, Trainspotting, our Twin Town, which, you know, I'm kind of old enough to remember 20 years ago when those films first came out. It seems like, for me, Irish films haven't really evolved as much. They're still kind of about the same, you know. They're trying to be the new Adam and Paul, or they're trying to be, you know, the new something else instead of making their own thing. And I think this kind of seems the sort of story that works as a play. I'm not sure. Based on the trailer, I don't think it's something that would work as a film.
Oh, right. Okay, I have to say, I do like the trailer now. I have high hope for Dublin Old School. But finally, Andy, Patton Oswalt, he has this fantastic theory about the Dark Knight, in particular, the Joker, because he's done a little bit of thinking about this one. And of course, The Dark Knight is going to celebrate its 10th anniversary this year. So reveal all, what has Patton Oswalt had to say?
Yeah, Patton Oswalt, for those who don't know, he's kind of a comedian, actor, very much ingrained in nerd culture. He wrote this post about basically what he considers to be the Joker's origin. Now, a lot of people have said they thought he might have been like an ex-soldier, but he's really gone into the specifics of it, that he could have been military intelligence, specifically about torturing the enemy. And he points to some scenes, like he kind of the Joker changing the story for each person, depending on who he's talking to. And then, of course, you know, in the centerpiece of Dark Knight is the interrogation scene with the two of them. And you see him kind of leading Batman through the interrogation. Batman slams his head on the table and he's kind of talking him through, no, you don't start with the head, the victim gets fuzzy, you do this. And depending on who he's talking to, like when he's talking to the gangsters, he's very kind of, you know, boisterous. When he's talking to Batman, he's very submissive. So he kind of plays the role of an interrogator and leads each person through, you know, what they want to hear. It's really, really interesting. I definitely recommend checking out, if you have a look on Patton Oswalt's Facebook page. It's about 3 or 4 pages long, but if you're, you know, Batman and Joker geek like myself, it's, you know, it's nectar for the mind there.
It's a fantastic theory, and fair play to Patton Oswalt. Andy, thank you so much for going through all of this week's movie news, because Andy's going to be back in the second half of the show, as he'll be looking at some of the best music biopics ever made, and we'll also be taking a look at all the new cinema releases for the weekend, such as Show Dogs, On Chesil Beach, and the Irish animated Oscar nominee The Breadwinner. We Love Movies is back shortly.